Hello, and welcome to the Winding Roads Companion podcast. I am your host, Catherine Lewiston, and I am so pleased to have with me in the studio two artists, and we'll start with Joe Schwarty.
Hi.
Introduce yourself,
artist,
Joe.
Artist is a very loosely applied term here, but
sure.
Joe Schwarty, I make furniture.
Fabulous.
Been here in the Driftless area for 30 years, moved here from the city of Chicago,
amazing.
Grew up in the city of Chicago, moved mm-hmm. here from Evanston. And lately I've been focusing on chairs.
Mm-hmm.
Just because at my advanced age, schlepping tools and cabinets for a built-in installation is more difficult.
Yeah.
So working on freestanding pieces and
gives you some good flexibility.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And we also have in the studio Christine Meyer.
Hi.
Yeah. Introduce yourself.
Yes. Hi, I'm Christine Meyer. I'm a painter that works in oils and watercolors. I really enjoy doing plein air work, which is working directly outside, painting from nature, and happy to be here.
Awesome. Great. Well, I would love for the two of you to share a little bit about your history in your medium and how long you've been doing it. How'd you get into it? Like, tell us a little bit about what got you into your art form. Why don't we kick it off with you, Christine?
Well, I had an opportunity when I was in college to study abroad at a little art school called the Marchut School.
Mm.
And it was focused on drawing and painting. And I had this wonderful experience there. It was really a unique little place where we learned about just painting from life. We had models. We had still lives. We would go out and paint in plein air, which is working directly from life, from nature. And also had this opportunity to, go to the museums. We would go to Paris to go to the different art museums. And just, it was really a holistic experience. So what you learned, like, in your art history class, you could relate to your studio class. And then we had a seminar course as well to learn about comparing and contrasting different works of art. So it was really, and just the beauty of being in another country and the language, the food, the culture, it was, inspiring.
Oh, I bet that was such a formative experience.
Yeah.
Where did you go to school?
So I went to college at Gustavus Adolphus, which is in St. Peter, Minnesota, small liberal arts school. And I was an art major at the time as well, but I was focused in ceramics and I needed to get my credits for painting, and that was kind of really the first time I really dove into painting.
Yeah, and why not go to France to do it?
Right.
Fabulous.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that just kind of planted the seed to really make me want to paint, and I've been doing it ever since. Just really, it's been part of my life.
Mm.
Off and on, with, other life experiences, but
sure.
Yeah.
Do you still do ceramics?
I haven't really done ceramics.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I really just focus on painting right now. Yeah.
So that was like a real turning point.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's
definitely.
Really cool.
Yeah.
A fork in the road. A fork in the winding road, if we may say. Maybe it's a little too on point. But and what about you, Joe?
It was all about survival. I'm the accidental artist. As a young man, I was a single father.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had to find a way to make a living to where I could have a completely flexible schedule with my young son.
Wow.
And so I ended up being self-employed or working for very tolerant employers. And along the way, I learned skills that allowed me to make a living. And then along the way, also, some creativity kicked in, and people liked my ideas. And then I worked with a fellow, Tim Anderson, who really put the wind beneath my wings and told me that my work had value and that the art art, quote, pieces were worthy. And and here I am, totally by accident, the unnamed arrow.
Wow.
That didn't miss. Yeah.
That's really cool. I mean, just this idea of like, you have this idea of like, well, all of the overlapping sort of parts of the Venn diagram, like I need to make money, I need it to be flexible, like I have to do all these things, and that small number of things that fit into the center of that Venn diagram, and then here you are, you know, decades later, and
I'm one of the luckiest persons you'll meet.
Yeah.
I feel that way anyway.
Oh, that's incredible.
Despite various setbacks, I could not have imagined this for myself.
Yeah.
And it's.
Can I ask, what did you expect to be doing?
A good question. I don't know. I mean, before I was drafted, I mean, as a young man, I worked at a grocery store, a large mm-hmm. chain in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the work. We worked hard. I liked dealing with people,
mm-hmm.
and it was. I had the mind of a grocery clerk until mm-hmm. I was 19 and got my butt drafted, and then the world changed.
Mm.
And I came out, and I did go back to the grocery store, but by then it was a different world.
Yeah.
And I just got into doing construction. And by then, of course, I had my son,
mm-hmm.
and... yeah, I had to find a way to make a living.
Yeah.
And I don't know where I'm going with this, but...
Yeah, no, I would love to ask both of you, and since we kind of have your story on the front burner here, Joe, I would love for you to answer this one first, and then we can pass it off to Christine. At what point, both of you in your stories have talked about sort of a turning point, an inflection, where you thought you were going to do something... and then you ended up doing something else. Mm-hmm. Or you were doing something for one reason and then it turned into a different reason. Like, Joe, can you talk a little bit about, have you reflected on what that inflection point was when you were making furniture, doing carpentry for a living, and then it turned into something different?
Yes, I have been thinking about that.
Mm.
And I refer back to when I was a grocery clerk.
Mm.
Eventually, I had a creative way of stacking cans. I was the go-to guy for building island end displays.
That's so cool.
It felt there was something that I didn't know was there exactly, but it satisfied a creative sense.
Yeah. Structure, construction,
all of that.
Yeah.
And actually, you bring up a good point, because this is something that I realized looking back, that if something came easy, I tended to distrust it. And in my case, for what I was doing and what I ended up doing, was structure somehow I could intuit.
Yeah.
And that served me well in carpentry and such.
Right.
And I enjoy a challenge.
Mm.
And kind of went from there. I designed my first piece of furniture in 1967 when I was in the Army,
mm-hmm.
and had it built by a cabinet shop off base. And that was the first furniture I designed, never giving any thought that I might be doing that. And I don't know, just things had a way of working out. And that just... after the initial the introduction to construction was as a concrete laborer,
mm.
and then after that, I was building sets. I went to art school on the GI Bill. Then I came out and didn't have any business in art school,
mm-hmm.
And then just got a job doing whatever, and I ended up working as a laborer for a plumber, pipe fitter,
mm-hmm.
and then. Building sets for a large photography studio in Chicago.
Cool.
And that really introduced me to woodworking tools and such.
Mm-hmm.
And
some applied learning.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool.
And working for the plumber in the recession of 75, there wasn't any work. and he was part owner of a bar that they were building at Broadway and Devon in Chicago, and I he set me down there, and that's where I started building stuff, and then I just started out building shelves and setting locks, replacing sash weights. But it was a very flexible schedule, and I was able to eke a living out. And then eventually working on bigger projects, we'd have architects' plans. This one client in particular, Liz, she had a plan for something, and I said, you know, do you like this? She said, you got a better idea. I said, well, I think so. So we redesigned the front porch and such, and things took off from there.
Very cool. Yeah. That's awesome. Christine, why don't you tell us a little bit about that inflection point?
Yeah. Well, I think that experience of living in another country just really opens you up to things in a new way.
Yeah.
And especially this particular school, because it seemed like not only were we learning about painting, I mean, we were learning about life and literature and poetry and music, culture. It just kind of all tied together. It was really, fascinating. So, I just think when you have that time and energy to learn something new, it just, it sparks something. So I think when I came back to school, I had to come back and graduate my last semester on campus and finished my degree. And, you know, I really was kind of searching for something different after that experience. I really wanted to, I was looking at living in the country more because I grew up in an urban area in a suburb of Chicago and was wanting a simpler life. So eventually that did bring me to the Driftless area.
Cool.
So, yeah, I ended up finding Dancing Waters, which is a permaculture co-op, and lived there for many years.
Oh, nice.
And, just learning about gardening and working together. And so I think that the school really impacted that experience, too. It brought me to this beautiful area and new way of looking at life.
Awesome. And you two are partners, and so I'm wondering if you would be willing to tell a part of your origin story, perhaps, like what brought you two together?
Television.
Wow.
I had a television and she didn't.
Really?
Well, more, I'd say movies.
Movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were looking for like a media fix?
Tell me more.
We would just get together with groups, and sometimes we'd go over to Joe's, a group of folks from Dancing Waters. We'd go over there to, just share some things, and that's where I met him. And just going into his home, he's a collector of art as well as his beautiful furniture, I was really blown away by just seeing all of these paintings on the walls and sculptures and furniture, and that kind of piqued my interest, and
the rest is history, as they say. Yeah, that's very cool. And so I would imagine that the two of you have quite the collection of pieces at home. I always love going to a house that I know artists live in because it's always beautiful.
I hope you come by for the winding roads.
Yes, absolutely. And so I would be curious to know if you have a favorite, or maybe that's the wrong question, but perhaps there is kind of a standout piece that, you know, the thing that you wake up in the morning and you look at in your living room or your dining room or whatever, and you just think like, oh, wow. Is there a piece like that in your home?
You know, I think about it when I'm in a nursing home and I have like one wall to look at.
Yeah.
I think I do. It varies though, but it's there's a piece. It's a painting of a neighborhood in Evanston, and I bought it in like 1970 something, and in 1986 I ended up owning that house in the painting.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it just, I don't know. And so
did you recognize it when you went to?
Well, I mean, I had the painting. I didn't buy the house because I had a painting of it.
Right.
It was just in the background of this painting that my friend Budimir did. I have a lot of his work. Budimir, he was another character in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I remember buying the first piece for $75, and I paid it off over time.
Oh,
and eventually
wow.
He had to prod me. It's like, you know, I really need that last $30. I'm like, okay.
Sorry.
But I do have some pieces that are favorites.
Mm-hmm.
But it changes.
Yeah. I would imagine that with the change of the seasonal light and how shadow and light kind of like plays in different rooms and different spaces, that different things will maybe become more highlighted over time. Christine, what about you?
Well, I just think, part of Joe's work, I mean, is our home. I mean, he's really transformed it and done amazing things with it. So I feel like I'm living in a work of art.
Oh,
it really, it's just, you know, something, yeah, just being able to sit in one of his chairs and stools and eating at the dining room table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just we're surrounded by beautiful pieces.
Yeah.
So that's just, yeah.
Function.
Yeah. I mean, it's functional and you're using it, but, you know, when you think back, especially when someone comes to our home and, you know, you realize, wow, you know, not everybody has this. And it's wonderful to share it, which we do with the Winding Roads. And
mm-hmm.
We do open up the house as well as studios for people to come.
Oh, very cool.
See, you know, his work, you need to see it in the space it lives in.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It's for sale.
You can take our dining room table if you want for the right price.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's, you know, no shade to my husband at all, but like if he wasn't around, I would be finding myself a furniture maker or a ceramicist. Those are beautiful things that are very, very useful as well. And so do you work primarily in creating collections, single pieces? Do you work on commission, or do you mostly do your own thing?
Yeah, I pretty much do my own thing. I mean, you know, it's interesting when you are doing artwork, it can be, you know, it's something you often do on your own. It can be a little isolating. So it has been nice over the years. I've had a painting buddy who we would get together and plan dates to go paint outside together in the warmer months. Or there's, you know, groups of artists that get together or doing workshops. Sometimes it's nice to have those opportunities as well.
Yeah.
Because you're, I don't know, sharing ideas and learning from each other. So it's not just... Yeah, so you're not doing it just on your own, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. And you work with watercolor and oil.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would you say are kind of like the magic bits of each of those types of painting or techniques of painting?
So I think for oils, I love the richness of colors, like really mixing the colors and finding those relationships, those color harmonies that I really enjoy with oils, that richness.
Mm-hmm.
And then watercolors, I feel like, actually are more challenging because, you know, you put that stroke on there and it's there.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a spontaneity to it. So you can really, you know, I don't know, just see something and do it and there it is.
Yeah.
So
that's very cool.
I love hearing you talk about this.
I love that this is my first kind of like combo podcast. And this is really fun. Having like three voices in the room instead of just two.
Yeah,
I think
cool.
That's really cool. And Joe, similar question to you, like how do you work as far as, are you primarily making pieces for yourself? Are you making collections? Are you working on commission? What's that sort of
all
schedule
of the above.
Like for you? All
but
of
my,
the above.
My first partner, we did carpentry together, Chris Tanqueray, in the mid-70s, he went to see Sammy Kahn in concert, songwriter. And what he came away with, he just said, you know, Sammy Kahn, what comes first? He said, I'm always asked, what comes first, the words or the music? First comes the phone call. And that was what got me started many times.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I end up getting a client and they like my work, I had one, Chris Randolph, great guy, and he would say, you know, Joe, I need a bed. You know what I like.
Yeah.
And just designed something that would go with what I thought he'd like.
Very cool.
And that worked.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times when I'm just, one of my, I guess, shortcomings is I don't plan. I tend to jump in with both feet and start mm-hmm. sorting things out. So when it's really working well, it's like jazz, and you can yeah. improvise. But it's, you know, you can make expensive mistakes with wood.
Sure.
It's not, so it would make a lot more sense to work it out on paper. But there's something about the live interaction between just seeing a vision take shape, literally. I mean, that happened with the Wangi desk, the adjustable height desk. I didn't know exactly how it was going, but where it was going, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
But it ended up being. I remember that buzz, and it's I don't know. It's nice when that happens.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen always, but it's nice when that happens.
Yeah, yeah. And so, is it the process for you, that feeling of flow or that feeling of improvisation, that you're really drawn to with this? Or is there also, I mean, there can, it's a both and kind of situation, right? It's not an either or. But can you describe a little bit about what draws you to perhaps the material or the tools, or, you know, is there some kind of magic in the physical components?
Well, yes. The magic in the physical components is just the sheer physical effort feels good.
Mm.
I like being active. I like feeling
yeah.
active. And that's, of course, it helps. You kind of have to stay active to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But just in terms of the work itself and that buzz, you know, at this point, I can't expect that buzz, but what I am looking for is looking back on some pieces that were successful and making them again and
uh-huh.
enjoying it.
Okay.
It's not like you always have to make... I mean, that's where it is an art. You know, you're not making something up. You're reproducing something that worked in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And that's satisfying, to have something that is successful and it feels successful. It works, and other people acknowledge it and are buying a piece, commissioning
yeah.
something you've done before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's finding that, it's finding fulfillment in reproducing something you've made before and not always looking for a new thing.
Yeah, you're not reinventing the wheel.
Well, actually,
sometimes I am. But if
yeah.
you do successfully reinvent the wheel and people go, oh, yeah, that's really cool, that gives you a chance to refine.
There are some original designs that I'm really proud of, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think you and Tullin Baird would have a great conversation, because he comes from this very almost studious attitude with types of wood, expansion and contraction with different wood species, and like how putting those things together mm-hmm. can result. You know, he comes from this very like planful, scientific almost
yeah.
sort of mindset.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a really fun counterpoint.
Well, I met Tullin
yeah.
a couple of years ago. He, at the end of the Winding Roads.
Okay.
I was talking to another fella in the shop, and I thought Tullin was with this other
mm-hmm.
fella I was talking with, but no, he was just hanging around, listening to us talk about stuff.
Sure.
But I've met
him. Taking some notes.
And he's, with the Winding Roads, what is it? Oh, the list of artists, the current mm-hmm. list of artists.
Yeah, and like the guidebook or whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and I looked up Tullin, and he's doing some really interesting stuff.
Yeah. He's doing a lot of things with like steam bending
yeah.
and things like that, and inlay. It's
yeah.
really neat.
Yeah.
I was able to record a podcast with him just a couple weeks ago, and it was a really fun conversation and a very different one from the one that I'm having with you. So that's really, really cool. And that's one of the reasons why I like doing this so much.
Different how?
Always good different. Yeah, always good different. Right. It's always a both and. It's almost never an either or. I would be so curious to know how you, what your routine looks like. With a partnership of artists and what your studio looks like. Obviously, people are going to be able to see the studio and walk through it and take the tour when they're on the Winding Roads Art Tour and you open your space up to the public. But I would be so curious for you to describe what your studio looks like, where it's located, how you work within it, what your routine is like. Why don't we start with you, Christine?
Right. Well, I think ideally, I tend to enjoy, I mean, I think of my studio actually as the outdoors because that's where I really enjoy painting. So when people do come to our home with the Winding Roads, I have my setup of paintings I have completed under this overhang in the back where we have this beautiful garden in the spring.
Oh,
so,
lovely.
I mean, that's my inspiration and that's really the place where I draw my, do my art from, is I love to just working directly from life. I mean, I do have my little studio is nearby there too, where I'll do, you know, more of some touch-ups and signing and the finishing part of it. But I really feel like working outdoors is my love.
Do you have a particular spot in this region that you like to revisit, or do you try to go to a different spot every time?
You know, it kind of depends on the time of year and what, if it's the landscape or if it's just, you know, something happening in the gardens, how, you know, our seasons are changing. Mm-hmm. You know, every day there's something new.
Yeah.
Is it the light, the color? Yeah. So it varies. But so I like a variety.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you stick mostly in this region or do you travel afield?
Yeah, mostly. I'd say mostly in the Driftless.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So lots of greens and blues.
Yeah. Midsummer, it's definitely a lot of green.
Yeah.
But that's, yeah.
Well, and gosh, with the winter we've been having, like that's all I've been dreaming about is that like the green haze when it starts to become spring. Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Joe? What's your studio like?
My shop is a mess. I walk in, but it's like heaven to me.
Mm.
And I remember when I have two sons and I was, I don't know, reflecting some years ago and I said, you know, I walk in my shop and it looks like an old man's shop. And they go like, well, and it's just someone who's been there a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, the story of my life is plastered on the walls, and then there's projects in various stages here and there. But it just is a dream come true, really. Mm. But the process, you asked about the process, and I had a friend, a mentor, Len Cullum, who he does incredible, authentic Japanese woodwork.
Ooh, beautiful.
He taught me how to make shoji, and he just makes beautiful, beautiful pieces.
And what is shoji?
Shoji are, you know, the Japanese screens with the rice paper.
Yeah.
Although I don't use rice paper. I use something more durable, which they sell.
Sure.
But he's when we were doing that mentorship at his shop, takes off his shoes and lights some incense and says that's when he knows he's at work.
And the ritual of it, that's beautiful.
Yeah. For me, when I get in the shop and when I put on my shop apron, this leather apron, that's when I know I'm at work.
Mm.
And it's,
yeah.
But schedule-wise, I like to keep I used to like to keep a strict schedule. I get to the shop by 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nowadays it's more like 9:30.
Yeah.
Knock off at 12, and then a nap, Get back to the shop maybe at 2:30.
Oh, that sounds great.
Work till 5. Go up and make supper.
Yeah.
But that's now. Then I liked keeping a routine.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was I had another mentor, Ed Paschke, who was a painter in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a neighbor. That's how I met him.
Mm-hmm.
And I would see him. His studio was above the Adelphi Theater on Clark Street.
Ooh.
And I'd see him going down in the morning and coming back at lunch,
mm-hmm.
going back at 1 o'clock, coming back at 5. And talking with him much later, getting to know him, he just said, you know, if you're working by yourself, there's always something else to do.
Yeah.
You got to keep that schedule, even if you got nothing going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, in his case, he said, you know, if he doesn't have anything going on, he would just start on a canvas, and he called it problem solving.
Mm.
And that is advice that is can serve anyone well.
Yeah, yeah. I do that on a very small scale. I'm a knitter, and every artist or craftsperson has their stash of whatever it is, right? And every once in a while, it's like, you don't want to actually be knitting. You don't want to be starting a project. You don't want to be doing anything with the needles themselves. But just the act of taking out and placing your stash out on the floor or the couch or whatever it is, and just looking at it and touching it and keeping tabs on all of that material and then putting it back is enough to scratch a really satisfying itch when it's like, oh, like, let me become more aware of the things at my disposal when I do feel that creativity or when I do feel the urge to start a new project. Like, I know exactly what I have at my fingertips. And I think, similarly, this idea of having your own studio that is separate from your house, I think can be really can be a gift. Because you can build that routine without the distraction of, I don't know, hearing the laundry alarm go off or something, right? You know, if your space is in your home, and some people just operate so well with that, but I have found a lot that having that separation can be so valuable, mm-hmm. because it allows you to have that distance between your artist self, your creative self, and your home self. Yeah.
Well, and you talking about bringing out the needles and such, and Len, that ramp up to doing the work. I remember, mm-hmm. he said sometimes he finds himself sweeping the shop 3 or 4 times just
yeah.
to.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of a ramp, because it is the case that sometimes actually doing the work feels like you have to like scale a wall and like, or jump over something, and it feels so insurmountable. And just this idea of like, what can I do to build that ramp to make it easier to get to the work? I think that's really cool.
You're not punching the clock.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
Although it just contradicts what I just said.
So I've been thinking a lot about metaphor and imagery when it comes to creative work. And when I think about the Winding Roads Art Tour and how that is a literal representation of what our country roads are like out here, but also a metaphorical representation of the work of an artist, I wonder if either of you have an image or a metaphor that comes to mind when you think about your work, when you think about your history of work. Is it, you know, climbing a wall? Is it floating a river? You know, is there some kind of picture that comes to your head?
A named arrow never misses.
Nice. Yeah.
I mean, that's Kinky Friedman, a line I'm stealing from him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool, because you also have that before the arrow is actually released, there is the preparation, you know?
The stretch.
Exactly.
So to speak.
Yeah, that tension.
Good on you.
Yeah. That's why we're here, folks.
Right. Well, and that makes me think of at the Marchute School, one of the, like, you know, we'd read different books for seminar, and one was, what was it again? Something about the Zen and the Art of Archery. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a philosophy book, but it kind of fit in with what we were doing. And just that whole preparation and, you know, what goes into it before you're trying to hit your target, the practice, the, you know, all of those things.
Yeah. Well,
the other image that pops in my head is a rabbit out of the hat.
Oh, yeah. You're like, well, let's see. You know, reaching around in there. What's going to come out? Here we go. Yeah, those happy accidents, you know, also to borrow from our boy Bob Ross. The happy accidents can be sometimes the most beautiful part.
You know, I had to be educated on who Bob Ross was.
Really?
Yeah, right.
Wait, how recently?
Within the last couple of years.
Are you kidding?
I'm not.
Do you not listen to public radio or watch public television?
I listen
television?
To public radio, oh, but I never saw that. I guess he wasn't in Chicago. I don't know. I still am not quite sure who he is, but he taught painting on the air, right?
Yeah. Okay. So people in Chicago don't make happy accidents.
Well, they had other accidents.
Yeah. So I'd love for you to share a little bit about how you got involved with the Winding Roads Art Tour. Like, what are the ties and the networks, and how many years have you been a part of it?
Well,
that sort of thing.
Well, when did it start again? I mean, I think the first year we did not participate in the tour, but we got to go around and visit.
But we did it.
But so that's the other side of it. I mean, sometimes I wish I was two different people, because you want to just go and visit all these beautiful spots. So the first year, that's what we did. We came into town and kind of bopped around different places and then drove out of town. I don't think we hit every single spot, but there's a beauty to, you know, you're just seeing what you're interested in and looking at the brochure and learning about the process of the different artists and the conversations you have with them. And then you're kind of meeting your neighbors and friends or new, you know, interesting people along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then driving out in the country, I remember going to one site and it's beautiful. You know, that time of year, the landscape is just transformed, and seeing the rolling hills, and it's magical.
Yeah. There's this one hill on Highway 82 by the Webster Town Hall that it's my favorite driving spot. And it's just, there's this moment where you hit the rise, and when there aren't silage bales in the way, you can, I mean, it's like the tallest spot for miles. And you can just see where the seabed used to be and see all of those coulees. I mean, it's just, and then it's gone. And I think part of it is that, like, you're going, you're driving on 82 and you just have this flash of, like, the expanse of it all, and then you're back down into a valley. And that's, I'm so looking forward to the tour this year. I actually moved here recently enough that I missed the tour last year. And so this will be the first year that I'm going on the tour.
Where did you move from?
That's a very long story.
I've got time.
Yeah. Well, my husband and I used to teach internationally. And so our most recent kind of home base was Abuja, Nigeria. And we were there for 4 years.
Wow.
And then we took a year off to travel and do a bit of soul searching, because we weren't sure if we wanted to teach again or if we wanted to continue teaching. So we saved up our money and we quit our jobs and we couch surfed with all of our other teacher friends who had moved to other places around the world. And we decided we didn't want to keep teaching, and a very convoluted set of circumstances led to us settling in this area. I'm originally from 2 hours north in Mondovi. And literally, I don't think I'd ever heard of this region.
I never did.
Like, living in Wisconsin my entire life. Mm-hmm. but I visited last January. Mm-hmm. And I just thought to myself, I remember calling John, my husband, and saying, I think we should move here. This place is great. in the middle of January, when it was one of those awful, like, warm days and everything was, like, full of fog. But even with all of that, when I drove down and I visited, I was like, the energy here is just really incredible. And a couple months later, you know, in May, like, here we were. And when the tour happened, we were still unpacking and living, you know, just down the block here on Main Street. But yeah, it's just been quite a trip.
This is timely because we have friends who they've invited us to dinner next week because they have a friend who is retiring. She lives down in Illinois and is thinking of moving to the Hill Country in Texas, where our friend is familiar with that. And he's inviting some ex-Chicago people. This woman who's retiring is from Naperville, Chicago area. He wants to tell her, before you retire to the Hill Country in Texas, you got to see the Driftless.
You should check this out.
And she's coming.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So, yeah. She very well might change her mind. Yeah. Who knows?
And that's always interesting to hear, like, you know, how did you end up here? There's always these great stories from everyone.
Yeah.
Dumb luck.
Yeah, truly. Well, and it's, I have said this all year, like every time, since we've moved here, every time I say something out loud about like, I'm looking for X, a couch, a sauna, like friends to sauna with, you know, every time I say something out loud, hours later, someone will pop in to my sphere and be like, hey, I've got this couch. Hey, I'm going saunaing, you know, like next weekend. You want to go? I mean, it's uncanny how often this has happened since we've moved to this spot. And it's really reinforced for me this idea of like, yeah, I think we made the right choice. This feels very good. It feels very positive. But what were we talking about?
I don't know.
Oh,
the tour.
Getting involved in the Rhymy Roads Art Tour. Yeah. And so how many years have you two done the tour? How many years have you participated?
Several. I forget exactly.
Okay.
Well, I think after that first year, we applied because we were like, oh, this is really neat. We're kind of on the outer stretches, but it's worth it.
It was another attempt on my part. I mean, I've been doing the Driftless Art Festival in September for...
Yes.
Since...
That almost, I have made it to. Yeah. It's lovely.
For a long time, almost. I think I missed the first year, maybe the first 2 years. But then John Craig and I have done it together for a while and then individually. But really, it was to introduce my work to my neighbors.
Yeah.
Because I kept going back to Chicago for work.
Interesting.
And eventually, over time, enough people around here picked up on my stuff.
So I think it was the next year we joined in and had been participating almost every year since, except last year we had a conflict, so we didn't do it last year. But
chose family over commerce.
Yeah, I think that's usually the right choice.
it was.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I think one of the things that has been revealing itself over the course of these podcasts is, you know, I've often described the network here as pretty mycelial. Like, it is dense, this social network, and every time, like mushrooms.
Mycelial.
Yeah, like mushrooms, right? It's like there are these sort of hidden connections. You know, you'll meet someone in one place, and then you'll meet someone else in a completely different spot. And you'll learn that those two very disparate people in those very disparate situations are connected through all of these experiences or, you know. And I think one of the things the Winding Roads Art Tour does is that it teaches us and it shows us that artists are the people next door. You know, like the person living two houses away from you could very well be a working artist or a hobby artist or a craftsperson. making beautiful things, and you may not even realize it, mm-hmm. right? Like, so many people in this region are making really, really cool stuff. And it's right under our noses. And something like this tour allows all of that to all of a sudden become visible and to, like, flower for this, like, weekend.
I have to tell a story.
Okay, you go ahead.
Yesterday, a group of us have been playing pickleball in the old community center in Gays Mills.
Cool.
For 2 years now.
Yeah.
Well, in the wintertime, we play in there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this woman that we just see in passing who occupies a space up above.
Mm-hmm.
We'd heard she was an artist. You know, we'd just say good morning and in passing. Yesterday, I said, do you make art up there? She said, yes. We went up there. She's doing this incredible work. Naomi Hart is her name. She does this incredible work in encaustic.
Ooh.
Beautiful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she was about to embark on a tour in the South art fairs to sell her work.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't go cheap, but it's really beautiful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing, talking about people who just set you back, quite a few years ago now, we had a co-op gallery in Gays Mills.
Yeah.
And people were bringing their work in. I'm going to put in a plug for Alvin Felch.
Okay.
He's a Gays Mills guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a carver. He looks like a lion. He is a lion. He's
just and a painter.
Yeah.
He's a painter. He's an artist.
And a sculptor.
Renaissance man,
yes.
Sounds like.
Definitely.
Lives very simply.
Yeah.
But we were bringing work in to the gallery, and Alvin brought in museum-quality carvings.
Oh, my goodness.
Just incredible complexity and beauty. But these are our neighbors.
Right? Yeah.
And they're right there.
It's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, I was wondering if either of you have any last words, anything you'd like to plug. You've been name dropping like crazy, Joe, which is great. I love it.
Yeah.
But there is always an opportunity with podcasts like this. Like if you have projects coming up, or if you have a showing, or, you know, aside from the Winding Roads Art Tour, of course, if there's anything in the next couple of months, you know, where people could see your work, or things that, even if it's just something that you're personally looking forward to, yeah, this is your opportunity to kind of shout it out. I don't know, book recommendations, anything.
Okay. Well, I would just say, you know, the only name I haven't dropped is my personal savior, Studs Terkel, who was, in addition to finding a way to survive, being self-employed also let me have control of the radio.
Mm.
And so when I wasn't making too much noise, so I was unable to hear it, every day, weekdays, Monday through Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. on WFMT, listen to Studs, and he provided an education to me.
Beautiful.
And it was, it led to, he is an incredibly curious person. In
mm-hmm.
fact, I think he said that's what he wanted his epitaph to be. Curiosity didn't kill this cat.
Cool. So. Cool. Christine, yeah. Anything from you?
I'm just grateful for this opportunity and looking forward to the Winding Roads. And we're so lucky to have WDRT in our community.
Absolutely.
Amen.
Huge shout out to WDRT.
We are sustainers.
Wonderful. You've got the sweatshirt. You've got the...
No, I don't have the swag.
Ooh, you've got to get your hands on some of that.
Talk to
Terry. He'll hook you up.
Okay.
Well, thank you both for being here.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah.